Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Josh Brown, I wish this was the wind-up. This is whatever me and you can make this recording into. I feel like hell. You feel like hell.
But we can't miss any more podcasts, Scott Tilford. No. I have missed this. So I'm referring to this, you know, colloquially. This is our sick day podcast. This is me and you being off school, you know, trying to keep each other company and hoping that everyone else can keep us company as well.
I tell you what, that's the thing. Welcome along to what is usually the wind-up, which is usually me and Josh going back and forward on the week's gaming news stories. Maybe there's something we need to argue about or whatever. And we just barely got the energy for it. So we are still going to run down gaming news stories. Can't guarantee there'll be that much energy in it, but we'll see. Part of me thinks if I force my way through this in terms of just going like big loud noises, I'll heal myself somehow. But it's a work in progress. But yeah, I've had COVID for the last week and a bit. Still got it according to the tests that I keep doing. You've been very ill as well. Thankfully, not COVID, but it seems like you've got this strain thing too. So we've both just been ill as hell for the last week or so.
I know, it's a nightmare, man. It's it's not what I wanted to spend the weekend doing, I'll tell you that. But it did mean, and I want to talk about this on a future podcast, but it did mean I could have finished all of Dark Souls 2. I played 20 hours of Dark Souls 2, finished that front to back. And that was an interesting time.
That made me more ill, you getting back into Dark Souls 2. But I was also like, you should, because it's like an essential thing. And like, yeah, I mean, I thought it would be banter. I thought it'd be funny if I just finished Elden Ring with COVID. I was just like, well, I've got COVID. I'll go fight the last boss. And then that'll just be something funny that I say for the rest of my life. That when I was dizzy and blurry, I was fighting the last boss. And Elden Ring finished. Me, you and James Stiles are going to do a Elden Ring podcast thing for the main show, because we've all finished it now. And we'll dive into general thoughts and stuff after hitting credits and stuff on that game, because it is a hell of a thing. And also we can talk about, well, actually, no, give me your thoughts on Dark Souls 2, because you've never played that. I want to know what you think.
Dark Souls 2 is very good, unsurprisingly. Mm. I thought Dark Souls 2 was a very good time. It wasn't what I expected.
Best backstab animations in FromSoft games?
Oh, I wouldn't go that far, but they're really pretty good. Pretty good parries them as well. I want to dig into this more, because I want to rank all the FromSoft games now, or at least all of the Soulsborne games, because, you know, I feel like I've never really done that. I've never really sat down and thought, like, which one's my favorite? Mm. It's interesting throwing Dark Souls 2 into the mix right at the very end, because it's such a different game from Dark Souls 1. And I wasn't really expecting that. And a lot of the changes took some getting used to. And once I got used to them, I was appreciating what this game brought to the table in a lot of ways. It's like such not more. It's like it could have just been more Dark Souls, but it's not. And it tries to do something different. And not everything works, obviously, but I like that they at least tried to experiment in a lot of ways.
I think you can tell that Miyazaki wasn't involved in it in like overall. Obviously, he came back in for the Scholar of the First Sin stuff. We'll do it as a wind-up, because it should be me versus you on the rank stuff. Because I know you'll put Bloodborne at number one, and I know maybe you won't actually. Maybe Elden Ring might have beaten it. I think you'll put Bloodborne at number one, but you'll have to wait and see. We'll do this. Yeah, where both of us have got way more energy to be able to do a top six at this point? Maybe more, I guess we do.
Demon Souls, Dark Souls 1 to 3, Sekiro, Bloodborne, Elden Ring, 7?
8.
7, top 7.
As I counted 8. 1. I am an ill man, but either way, we'll do
there
this next time. In terms of the latest breaking news stuff, kind of also a follow-on from Elden Ring, it seems like FromSoft have been in touch with Brandon Sanderson, who is an incredibly famous fantasy author, the dude that just raised $41 million on Kickstarter, an unprecedented amount for us, for a self-publishing author, who is known for the Mistborn series. He's just this huge fantasy deal. I didn't know, but I was sitting next to my book person wife, who freaked out when the words Brandon Sanderson were mentioned. Because apparently From Software want to do a, I guess, Elden Ring style game with Brandon Sanderson. And like I said, he's known for Mistborn. Apparently he came in and finished off the Wheel of Time series when the original author couldn't finish the books and stuff. And he's just this massive deal. Like I said, he raised $41 million on Kickstarter, which was an insanely unprecedented thing. And it seems like he always is very on the ball in terms of turning around a lot of books, which is kind of the opposite of George R. R. Martin. So he's said that he already has a pitch for what he would do for a Souls game, because he likes to write pitches and stories in advance of teams getting in touch with him. He said that he initially right. wrote an entire Magic the Gathering story with the hopes that Wizards of the Coast would get in touch, so that when they did and they said, would you like to do this, he went, well, yes, it's literally this. And so apparently he's already done this for what he would do for a Souls game. I don't think he's written it out in full, but he knows exactly what kind of story he would do. And yeah, FromSoft got in touch and apparently have asked to do a collaboration with him. And so a lot of people who are Sanderson fans are justifiably freaking out. Me and you don't know that much about him, but I think in terms of this signaling a potential Elden Ring 2, like, what do you want to see from FromSoft, and what do you want to see from, like, the way that they put Elden Ring together in terms of the way they collaborated with George R. R. Martin?
I mean, first off, yeah, you're totally right. Like, I'm not familiar with this writer at all, but it's cool to see, you know, people with, you know, obviously a lot of experience and a lot of passion, you know, like you said there, you know, kind of preempt a pitch and make your own pitch. Like, that kind of passion, that kind of drive, like, it's just exciting to see. And I want to see what comes from this partnership. Should it go ahead? But, like, yeah, I've been thinking a lot about what I want from Software going forward. And I don't know if I want an Elden Ring 2, if I want them to go back and make a Bloodborne 2 or what, because originally,
just patch Bloodborne. Just patch it.
This is the thing. Originally, in a video that actually went up a few weeks ago, I said they should never make a Bloodborne 2.
Right.
But post Elden Ring, I think old Josh was an idiot and they definitely should make Bloodborne 2, because I want to see them stick with the open world formula from now on. And I just think that's opened up so many different opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I want to see them, you know, I want to see an Elden Ring 2. I want to see a new IP, but I also want to see Bloodborne 2. I am a very selfish and greedy person, and I want all of those three things. And I just couldn't prioritize any, because I'm excited.
Well, the thing is, I'm currently debating writing things no one wants to admit about Elden Ring. And I think one of those is that they do reuse too much. Like, I mentioned the backstab animations with Dark Souls 2, because I remember them sticking out quite a lot in terms of being something fresh. Like, Elden Ring has the same backstab animations, the same weakened stab animations as Dark Souls 1. Like, they've had the exact same stuff for way too long. And I think for as much as they go, oh, this is a new IP, this is a whole new world. And it is, you can argue it. There's a lot of the same DNA in there. And so, like, for me, it's like, it's almost like you might as well just call this a sequel. If you're going to, like, Elden Ring could have been Dark Souls 4. Like, if you just called it that, there's not that much that really, you know, like, there's all the sort of family, royal family lineage stuff that George Martin obviously brought in. There is some of the wider lore stuff. But if you just called it Dark Souls 4, I think most of us would just go with it and be like, cool. Like, that franchise is so malleable anyway, that I wonder just whether they're inevitably just kind of creating sequels anyway.
It's true. I think, you know, you look at all of the games, you look at, you know, Demon's Souls into Dark Souls into, you know, even Bloodborne into Elden Ring. Like, there's obviously, you know, threads throughout there, like repeated motifs, repeated, you know, aesthetic designs and repeated mechanics, certainly. But I like that they're all discrete. You know, I appreciated Elden Ring more, Elden Ring going to Dark Souls 2 and just kind of looking at how far they've come in, like, 10 years, you know, because literally jumping straight from the menu of Elden Ring and then starting up Dark Souls 2. Like, I just couldn't believe how different they felt, because you do go from game to game. You're like, oh, well, not much has changed. You know, they've refined this, they've refined that. Mm-hmm. And that's true. And it was only putting them side by side where I was like, holy crap, like, this was a huge leap. Even the stuff that I took for granted and thought was very similar is actually different. And I like that with From Software, we have a game style and we kind of know vaguely what we're going to get with each one. But each, for me at least anyway, each franchise justifies being its own franchise. Like, you could call Dark Souls, Elden Ring, Dark Souls 4, and it would probably sell, like, just as well or whatever, and it would make some thematic sense. But by separating it, like, you keep Dark Souls, you keep that trilogy kind of, for me, focused on one theme of, like, kind of, like, cycles, and, you know, like, obviously, like, the flame and the dark and all of that stuff. And making this Dark Souls 4 would reduce that series down to just a group of mechanics, where I personally think it's a bit more than that.
No, that's true.
It's world, it's a thematic kind of preoccupations. And Elden Ring obviously shares a lot of DNA, but it is its own thing. And I think it justifies being its own thing.
I wish they would vary up the mechanics more. Like for me, like as much as I got like, you know, Sekiro like pushed me to the brink of like, oh my God, I just need to finish this. That Genshiro fight was an absolute like hellscape, but I didn't enjoy that I did it. Sekiro for me is even more standalone now because like it's even more like, you know, if you play Sekiro now, like it is more cutscene driven. You have an actual like character who talks to, well, you know, who is in cutscenes with people who are talking to them. Like there are actual cutscenes. There are like the combat system is different. All those animations are different. There's nothing reused from the Soul series. And it's just, it is one of those things where I kind of wish Elden Ring was more of its own complete package, that it didn't have the Dark Souls DNA kind of thing. I know that's completely away from, well, not necessarily completely away from what we were initially talking about, but you know, if they do Elden Ring 2 the same way that they did do Dark Souls 2 and sort of just do like a trilogy of Elden Ring games, then you can do. It's going to be a case of reusing these mechanics yet again, though.
For me, it hasn't got to a breaking point yet, and I happily accept the reused textures or animations or whatever is just kind of the reality of making these games so quick. Like, if you look at the run they've had over the past 10 years, you know, they've launched a Dark Souls trilogy, they've launched Elden Ring, they've launched Bloodborne, they've launched Sekiro. You know, they've had these games coming thick and fast, which with DLC expansions for each one in between. Like, the turnaround on these things are crazy. The fact that Elden Ring itself only took, like, 4 years of proper
something
production
like that,
to make. Obviously, it was in pre-production a little while before then, like the idea was being kicked around, but like talking actual production from Sekiro to this, like it's crazy that that game is so big and so detailed with that short amount of time. So it's like, yes, they are reusing stuff, but to me, that just makes for more efficient development, if that makes sense.
No, it is. It's just, it's splitting hairs at some point, but like if you look at like Rockstar's run across the 2000s, like those original 3D GTAs, like, yeah, you go back to them now and they're even more obviously the same engine that's been reskinned, but they would add like, you know, like different animations, like across the board. Like, I guess there was some stuff that was reused, but I feel like they made a point of trying to distinguish each one of them. Whereas there were just little bits of Elden Ring, and I'm not going to make it all about the backstab animations, but that was one of the things where I was like, this is literally the same thing from 10 years ago, and it was the same sluggish feel to it. But whatever, my overall point with that is just that if they're going to kind of go forward with it, I don't want it to take too much of the old stuff. Like, I want it to feel like its own thing more, and I don't even want to be able to think this could have been Dark Souls 4, or like in terms of the way that it moves and in terms of the way those animations play out and stuff. Next thing though, is that Sony Bend are apparently working on an open world stealth action game that's a spiritual successor to Siphon Filter. This comes from a fairly new account called Oops Leaks, who people are still sort of going back and forth on whether to trust them or not. And they also tweet saying that they are also skeptical, but multiple sources they have access to have confirmed it. Development is apparently in full swing, despite the studio's frustration over a rejection of a Days Gone sequel, and it'll be a late Cold War setting. They mention to think Hitman, think Metal Gear Solid 5, with much denser locations and online elements and co-op is planned, but don't expect a release in the next couple of years. What do you think?
Well, first, I can't believe, I still can continue to not believe that Days Gone 2 was thrown out and not made. Like, the thing with Bend, right?
You
I feel
don't
like
want more Days Gone. No,
I do.
No.
I do because, like I said, like the thing with Bend, I feel like they've got like an incredible game in them, and they've kind of, you know, made these stepping stones, if you will, to get to that point, to get to the point where they're talked about, like a Naughty Dog, like a Sucker Punch or whoever. And for me, Days Gone was like the closest they've come to properly establishing something, and it just feels a bit of a shame to throw another foundation out to make something new. I'm quite excited for this idea. You know, I'm a huge stealth fan. I like the idea of mixing Hitman and Metal Gear Solid 5, Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain, of course. But when it comes to just like the potential that Days Gone had, I feel like that was a 7 out of 10 game that could have maybe had like a 9 out of 10 sequel.
Yes. And the thing is, Days Gone was fascinating because I feel like even in the run-up to launch, it didn't fully get there. And I feel like they must have known that. Like, and even when it dropped, it was like, cool, it's the new PlayStation first party exclusive. But I remember everybody being really surprised by the sales. And it was like, well, I guess zombie stuff still sells. But that was kind of all they had. And obviously the Horde stuff looks really impressive. And technically, it's like a big strain on the hardware and everything. But I feel like they didn't do that much with that, as much as it was meant to be this big selling point. And I you know, I quite like Days Gone, but I just, when I think back on it, I'm like, it's just this big stodge. This thing that took up like 50 hours of my life or whatever it was, and I didn't even finish it. I don't remember the ending really. I don't think I actually got through it. I remember you slogging through it, And then you took like a month off games after that because you were like, I need to absolutely decompress. But yeah, I just remember Days Gone being a bunch of cool ideas. And in the moment, I liked a lot of the survival stuff. I like the, like, it's like State of Decay. I like sort of semi or fully open world zombie stuff where you don't know what's around the next corner. That was some of the best parts of Evil Within 2 when that went a bit bigger. But it made me go like, this is a bunch of scattered ideas and you've not really coalesced and it feels a bit exhausting. And to me, I want them to move on. I want them to be like, that was a thing we tried. Right. And, you know, we ticked a bunch of boxes that should have been big money, and it was big money, but that was kind of it.
I mean, I agree with you, but with everything that you just said, funnily enough, and this is why this is an episode of The Wind-Up, is why I want a sequel from it. Because, like you said, you know, it was scattered, it didn't coalesce, but there were some interesting things in there. Like you said, the horde feature that the game was pretty much sold on, like, that doesn't even show up in the game itself for about 10 hours, if not longer.
And it randomly spawns everywhere.
Yeah, it takes a long time to appear, and it's like, that's a cool mechanic, like having hundreds of zombies like chasing you and you trying to figure out how to take them out with your weapons, with environmental traps, with just being smart and leading them into, you know, fighting each other or whatever. Like, that's a cool idea, but it was just sort of under an avalanche of other content and story beats that repeated themselves or were dragged out and stuff, which is to me why it's a cool experiment and why it kind of deserves more, because there are good ideas in there. And for it to just be kind of like completely swept under the rug, I do think undersells some of the cool ideas that were brought to life by that team.
True. To pivot into the thing, if this is true, the whole idea of doing a stealth game in 2022 or going forward, like, you know, the rest of the generation or whatever, do you think this is the only way that we get stealth games now of any sort of like decent production quality? Because stealth as a genre has just died off. Like, you know, it's an entire genre reduced to just hide in the tall grass. So that's as best as we can do. And so I kind of wonder, I mean, that's obviously the Oops Leaks account is mentioning Hitman and Metal Gear Solid 5. But it's interesting because he's like, well, think Hitman, think Metal Gear Solid 5. They are two polar opposites for me. One of them is isolated specific environments. The other is completely open-ended self. So I guess it's kind of a combination of the two, almost like Elden Ring, where you've got little pockets of actual levels, let's say, on, you know, around the periphery of the map itself. Is that kind of what you would want from a stealth game, or do you want more specific levels? Like, I want the Hitman approach. I don't necessarily want the open world thing, unless you can do it as well as Phantom Pain.
That's it. It needs to be as good as Phantom Pain. Like, you need to have, you know, kind of the fluidness of Phantom Pain's mechanics, as well as its kind of like enemy placement and design. You know, the fact that, like you said, you know, you've got this big open world, but when you go into an area, it feels like a level. It feels curated, like a level where you can approach it any way you want, but you're getting the flow of something that is scripted and something that is like a piece of architecture or whatever. So it's going to be difficult to do, but I'm just so sick, my friend, of having stealth be hyphenated with something else. You know, it's action. It's an RPG stealth game or something in the AAA space. I feel like you said, you know, like the core stealth experience has just kind of died off. Yeah, we have Hitman. Yeah, we have some stealth games, some dedicated stealth games in the indie space or the AA space or whatever. But on this level, like you said, you know, we hold up Phantom Pain as the last great one. And that was seven years ago. Yeah. It was a long, long time ago. And even that was Metal Gear, you know, like one of the legacy historic franchises, one of the last remaining stealth games. You know, there's that joke in, I think it's the Wildlands DLC, where Sam Fisher sort of says, like, he's the last one left because Metal Gear has obviously been killed off now that, you know, Kojima has moved from Konami, and there's only Sam Fisher, and even Sam Fisher's only getting a remake, is only starring as a side character in DLC expansions for other games, which sucks. I guess, if they're going to go in all in on it, sorry, just to finish off, if they're going to go all in on it, I want them to go all in on it. I don't want them to be, like you said, you know, it to be an experience where you can do stealth if you want, you can hide in the grass if you want, like, nah, like, curate the content around that idea.
It makes me wonder if, because obviously, yeah, with Splinter Cell, we're getting the Splinter Cell remake, but I just don't buy that is, like, I don't know. I like stealth in the way that it took off in the early 2000s, especially in the Splinter Cell context, or especially in the non-Metal Gear context, was very like, here's a level, here's how you get through it. It's very linear. And then obviously all the copycat stuff just sort of, like, you know, dug down on those things. Do headshots, hide in the shadows, get all the guards to come around the corner at once and make a big pile of bodies. And that was kind of the thing. And I want more experimentation. It's why I really like where Splinter Cell went. As I love the original ones too, obviously, Chaos Theory, but I quite liked Conviction and Blacklist, because you suddenly had a lot of verticality to those levels. And, you know, you could make like escapes and run up the side of the wall and go hang off the ceiling. And it was all, everything was faster. And I was like, why was nothing ever fully taking advantage of this? Like, Tenchu was kind of like that. And like the Shinobito series that came from that was flying that flag a little bit. There's like one release on the Vita, like three people played or whatever. And it's just like those things where I was like, acrobatic stealth is really cool. Like, you know, moving through a level in a way that's constantly experiment and letting you experiment is really, really slick. So yeah, I don't know. I kind of have faith in Sony Bend to some degree, but I also wonder that because it's a PlayStation first party thing, I think that's where the open world stuff comes from. Cause they're just like, well, you're gonna need a workbench. You're gonna need some light crafting components. You have to go and, you know, craft some silencers or whatever it is. So I guess we'll see. But yeah, there's a lot of potential with this. The next thing down is that Rare's GoldenEye remake is apparently releasing imminently. I feel like we've heard that for the last few months. But there's leaker accounts doing the rounds because the trademark for this was renewed back in March. Last month in March. And the assumption is that because all the big games have now gotten out the way, Xbox can finally step forward and go, we've got something too. And it's the GoldenEye remake. So there's a whole bunch of stuff with this because Rare initially remade GoldenEye, the N64 GoldenEye, in the 2000s. Apparently it was a completely finished game. And then it didn't release because of some big clash with Eon, who owned the James Bond license. And they just said, you'll have to shelve it. And for whatever reason, it never came out. But it resurfaced. I think it was last year initially where the build was online again and we saw people starting to play it, but it was only obviously leaked and everything. Xbox have been working towards releasing this GoldenEye remake thing, and apparently that's finally coming out. Do you think that anyone even cares about GoldenEye in 2022?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire. You need Indeed.
I don't think so, man. I mean, we talked about this in the podcast a few weeks ago, didn't we? And I just like, I mean, I'm sure there's some diehard fans out there who have been waiting on this, you know, remake, remaster for a long time, but like I said then, you know, I feel like there's people of my generation who didn't necessarily grow up with it, right, who have kind of like just heard of it as this like legacy thing, or maybe have played it at friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like, especially if this was completed in the 2000s or whatever, it's kind of just like, it's not for me, but if it's for you,
I am very curious what it plays like, because the reason the original GoldenEye took off so much was because it was a lot of people's first ever deathmatch. Like, it was a lot of people's first ever split screen multiplayer experience. And especially on an N64, obviously that console had so much energy around it anyway. It worked. But that game's control scheme has aged. Like, it's not that it has aged badly, obviously, compared to where the likes of Modern Warfare is or Warzone or whatever, but it's still largely functionable, like, you know, serviceable. You can go and have fun with GoldenEye. And I think, but it kind of needs to be encased in that N64 wrapper. Like, when you were over at my house for my 30th and everyone was playing GoldenEye, like, part of the fun is getting used to the old controls and then managing to pull off a headshot or whatever. And I kind of wonder how much they've had to go into the guts of it and change the way that it feels to be able to, like, what the hell even is making GoldenEye work in 2022? And whether that becomes something more like how Time Splitters kind of feels, because some of the dudes from Rare went on to do the name of that dev, I've completely forgot who made Time Splitters. And I wonder if
Free
that's...
Radical.
Free Radical. I was like, it's not from anything. No, yeah, Free Radical. I wonder if that's how it ends up feeling. And that is in itself quite an identifiable feel to a shooter. But yeah, I'm super curious about this. It's a nice little archive piece. The best thing about it will be the main menu music. I'm calling that now, but hopefully it's sweet. Another leak that I'm going to throw in from the old Oops account is just because they're doing the rounds quite a bit at the minute, because they are talking about very interesting things whilst also saying, take it with a pinch of salt. I'm skeptical. I don't know. But the Oops leaks account is throwing some juicy things out there that I think are worth talking about anyway. And another one, they said they've come across various PlayStation leaks, but they couldn't verify them in full. But they said they were worth talking about anyway. So one is that The Last of Us's factions multiplayer game has been completely rebooted. Apparently it was going to be a battle royale. Now, according to them, it's a mix of Tarkov and The Division, a single player like experience in an online game. It's going to be free to play on PS5 and it's later coming to PC. Alongside this, actually, no, we should break that stuff down. And then I've got more stuff. But what do you think of them? The whole thing about Naughty Dog doing a battle royale just made me cringe in the first place. I know that a lot of assets were leaked from the PC build and stuff, or people started hacking The Last of Us 2 and found those items that would work in a battle royale setting. I don't need that in my life. I know you probably do. I don't.
That's the thing. I probably would have taken that because, you know, I'm not a massive battle royale fan. I really like Warzone, but I'd never, you know, got on with any of the other games. You know, I never got on with PUBG, Fortnite, or anything like that. But for me, the Last of Us multiplayer suite in the original game, Factions, was so cool, the gameplay supporting The Last of Us is so satisfying, especially in The Last of Us 2, which is way more fluid, way more visceral, way more tactile than it ever was. I just think that world and that set of mechanics lends itself well to a battle royale-esque survival experience, you know. And when it comes to this multiplayer experience, like, it could be anything at this point. It's definitely bigger than Factions. If it was just Factions again, it would have been out by now. You know, we're almost 2 years out from the release of The Last of Us Part 2. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we still haven't seen anything from this, but we know it exists because they've mentioned it, is to me a little bit crazy. So I would believe it if someone said, like, look, it was internally rebooted, because otherwise, where's it at? Where's it been? Why have we not heard anything about it in so long?
I wonder if they're holding back because they want something to sort of like lead the charge on their live service push. Like, we've obviously got Jim Ryan talking about it a lot. And obviously bought Bungie to help support that stuff with netcode things or whatever lessons they've learned in terms of live service things. And maybe something like that has led into, you know, actually you want to hold back because we're going to launch it this way and we're going to do this payment model and we're going to do all those kind of things. Because in terms of Sony experimenting with, you know, payment models, like Destruction All-Stars was a mess. Gran Turismo 7 is an absolute insulting mess to the fans who have stuck by it this long. They need to get it right. If you're going to go Last of Us is free to play, the thing that immediately follows that has to be, but you need to play it because blah. And it's like, if it's just this big, empty, weird framework that's going to get stuff plugged into it, then I love The Last of Us Factions. I really want them to do way more with it. Like, I love all the social media connection and obviously the way that it plays and everything, but I hope that it is gameplay first. I hope it's not, you don't feel like you're being nickel and dime kind of thing, because they need to nail the gameplay side.
Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, you've got anything going live service, anything going free to play that is an established franchise. I think you've got to be a little bit skeptical, especially with the way the industry is at the moment and the way that Sony is with their live service push. You know, it's completely right to be skeptical. But with it being, you know, Naughty Dog, who I at least bank on delivering, you know, solid, fully formed experiences, that to me bodes well, obviously. You know, I think the foundations are there. Like I said, The Last of Us 2 has a solid foundation, and I hope they can take the lessons they learned from Factions and deliver something that does blend the single player and multiplayer, because, you know, I loved the social media integration, like you mentioned, in the Factions gameplay, to give it some kind of framework, some story framework. But it's almost been 10 years since they did that experiment. You know, there's a lot of lessons to be learned since then in the live service space, and both in a storytelling space from knowing themselves to flesh that out.
That's actually terrifying that we're 1 year away from The Last of Us being a decade old. That's a lovely thought.
That's when we're going to get the remake. That's when we're going to get the remake. So they drop on the anniversary.
That's another thing. Maybe that's what they're waiting for. Like, they know there's going to be a whole Last of Us marketing push thing. So, yeah.
Totally. I mean, they've got this multiplayer thing. They've got the remake in development. Mm. The show is coming out next year. Why not just drop them all together and have like a month of The Last of Us being this big loving, you know?
Possibly. Yeah, I keep forgetting that show exists. But we'll get back to The Last of Us in a sec because apparently Naughty Dog's next IP, their next full new game, is a fantasy game. Now, apparently Neil Druckmann isn't involved in this, but the game is in full production. Now, me and you covered this last January. I barely remember. I remember the leak, but I don't remember us covering it. But there was a leak last January 2021 that Naughty Dog's next game was going to be a fantasy game, like a swords and sorcery type fantasy game. And this came from a leak of one of the Naughty Dog's artists called Hyung Nam, who did a whole bunch of different pictures of various women, various fantasy like mages and warriors and stuff. And they called it Women of the North. And people went, is that for your new game? And then he went, no, it's actually just inspired by Assassin's Creed Valhalla. But that was after it all blew up and stuff. And which, you know, was a nice little cover and everything. But that's what this leak makes me think of, because maybe Naughty Dog have been wanting to do a fantasy game for this long. And I went back and watched our old news video, and old me had already researched that the Naughty Dog were hiring for melee animators and combat animators and things like that, and stuff that would point towards the idea of a more intense melee system, let's say, maybe something like a For Honor or whatever. What do you think of like Naughty Dog's next IP being a fantasy, I don't know, Game of Thronesian type thing?
It's cool. Like, it's, you know, it's something that they've obviously not really done before, and I'm all up for them doing new IP. You know, we've had a decade now of The Last of Us and Uncharted dominating. Both of those series seem to be on ice, at least for a little bit, you know, while they work on the remake, while they work on the TV show and stuff. So, yeah, to see them come out swinging with a new IP, I think, is almost long overdue. You know, we had an entire generation of Sony first-party studios making new IP. You know, we had Ghost of Tsushima, we had Horizon Zero Dawn, while Naughty Dog was working on established franchises.
The first time they ever didn't do a new IP. Yeah,
totally. So it's something that I've been very hungry for. Mm-hmm. Fantasy, you know, I'm going to make a sweeping statement and say that fantasy isn't something I get inherently excited about. You know,
no, I'm with
you, obviously love fantasy things like Skyrim, great, Elden Ring, great, but
I'm a sci-fi. Give me the sci-fi.
Yes, totally same, exactly the same. But still, it's Naughty Dog. Like I said, I have so much confidence in them. The fact that Neil Druckmann isn't involved is also really interesting. Obviously, he's got his hands full. I think he's very high up in Naughty Dog now, if I recall, like a vice president or something. You know, he got promoted. He's working directly on the show. So I'm kind of pleased that his attention isn't being divided between like all of these things and now a new game. It's cool to see new creatives come through in that studio and get their chance to shine, you know, exactly like Neil Druckmann and Bruce Straley were allowed to do with the original Last of Us, like passing that baton on. It's just cool. It's exciting. I want to see some new blood, some new ideas, and see what they can create.
The thing is as well, I want Naughty Dog to make something that isn't like super maudlin and, you know, hyper mature and bloody and gritty and gruesome and whatever. I like, obviously their initial back in the day in the 90s they were doing like early RP, like Rings of Powers, like the RPG stuff, then they went into platformers and cutie stuff and whatever, but I want to see what else that studio can do. They've done gritty mature stuff for almost a decade, like we said, and Last of Us was such a great pivot. Not that the Uncharted series obviously wasn't mature in itself from Jack and Daxter, but I wonder what else ideas they have, and I wonder how much Druckmann and Straley, like, you know, because obviously when they came into Uncharted, Uncharted 4 became like The Last of Us, and that's great. I love Uncharted 4, but at the same time, it's art direction, it's general feel. It was very like, yes, everything's very serious now, and we need to, you know, it's one of them. And I want to see what else they can do in that studio. And I kind of hope that if they do a way more lighthearted, I don't know, like, I'm not gonna say fun, but something that isn't Last of Us edged fantasy game, that would be sick. And I want to see what that is. There were always rumblings of a Naughty Dog sci-fi game for the longest time, and I forget its name, but there's a comic that's popped up in various games that they've done. It's one of the ones
Savage Starlight.
I love this, man. And it was because it's in various games, and Ellie's reading it in The Last of Us as well, and a lot of people went, okay, what's Savage Starlight? Why do you guys keep seeding that in places? And thinking that maybe that was going to be their next thing. So just like I said before, I'm a sci-fi's man. It's not that I don't love fantasy. Literally had a Lord of the Rings themed wedding, but at the same time, I would love a sci-fi Naughty Dog game. And I think the nearest we got to that was what that original Star Wars 1313 footage looked like in terms of the way that thing was moving and the art style and everything. And yeah, I would love to see them just create a cool world from scratch in a sci-fi context. For me, you can always do more with sci-fi than you can with fantasy. I just feel like it's more open to storytelling in a way that fantasy isn't. You can do more with the philosophy side of it and whatever. So yeah, I'm curious about that. The last thing is back to the Last of Us stuff, which is just the Oops Leaks account mentioning that the Last of Us Part 3 is still circulating around that studio. And he says that Druckmann already noted officially that the script had been outlined for what they would do, but Naughty Dog got engrossed more in the development of the factions game that we mentioned in the fantasy game that's coming together as well. He does say that when development starts, he expects it to begin faster due to the studio's overall expansion. But what do you think of them doing a Part 3? Like, after everything that happened with Part 2, did they just sort of crack on? I mean, it did sell extremely well and it's revered very well. They just kind of go, let's just do Part 3.
I mean, you know me, Scott, I think The Last of Us Part 2 owns, and I want to see a Part 3 because I like those characters. I like the new characters. I like the returning characters. I like what they did, and I like where they left it. And I think it's going to be interesting to follow whoever you pick up with, whether you follow Ellie, whether you follow Abby, or, you know, whatever happens next. I do want to give them, I want them to give it some space. You know, like I just said, you know, Neil Druckmann is obviously very busy. They have this new IP or whatever the hell they're working on now alongside The Last of Us Remake, alongside The Last of Us multiplayer game. So The Last of Us is covered for a while. Like, just go off, do some of the games, you know, do this fantasy game, do whatever, leave it another 7 years or something, 8 years, and then come back for the Part 3. Like, for me, that's the way to do it. You know, there was a long time between Part 1 and Part 2, and I wouldn't mind if there was an equally long wait between Part 2 and Part 3, because when it comes to this franchise, for me, it's like, I want them to justify it existing. It's not a franchise. I want to see them just churn out sequel after sequel. It needs to be a good idea and something that people are passionate about.
That's kind of what was fascinating with 2, where as I went through it, I was like, this is incredible. I was in absolute bits by the end of it, but the first thing I thought when the credits hit was, I didn't need that. And I think that it's not that it did justify its existence in terms of the overall production value, and it's a fine enough story to tell, but I the more distance I've got from The Last of Us 2, the more I didn't need it. And so I wonder what you do. Like I said, the more that I think back on it, the more even Part 2 feels quite forced. Like, I would love it if Last of Us was a one-off, and like I would feel personally that it's stronger as a one-off before you go back and tease out all those threads to justify a sequel or whatever you need to do to justify a Part 3. Also, part of the message of Part 2 is how dragged out war and conflict can feel. So I kind of wonder how much more you can hammer that home, considering how well they do that in 2.
Yeah. That's kind of like where I'd jump in and say, like, if they do make a Part 3, I think you need to learn from the lessons that the narrative of Part 2 established. Like, I don't think you can do another completely grim, dark thing. I mean, it's The Last of Us. Of course, it's going to be, you know, gritty and realistic and violent and very, very dark. But like you said, you know, the Part 2 was famously all about the cycles of violence and breaking those and growing into someone else and trying to have some hope and changing and evolving and maturing. And hopefully with Part 3, we get a version of this, you know, universe that isn't steeped in that kind of violent, revenge-driven mentality. And it's something, it's like a new chapter. It's a new chapter for the characters. It's a new chapter for the world. And we take those lessons and kind of make a more hopeful game to cap the trilogy off, maybe.
Yeah, I might just 180 everything else I just said. Let's say you do a Last of Us Part 3, and it is also about Ellie, and you then retrospectively, once 3 is out the way, you can look at it as a trilogy of this one person who went through all 3 games, and you can look at Joel's influence on her, you can look at Dina's influence on her, you can look at all the various factors, all the different the wider literal factions that she interacted with across Last of Us Part 2 as shaping this person. Like, that, depending on what happens in 3 and where she ends up at the end of 3. I'm getting more bunged up as I talk. My nose is failing me, but I'm determined to make this point. I think that could actually become a really cool character trilogy, because one of the biggest obviously talked about things with 2 was how little Joel was in it. And if you reframe that, recontextualize that as a full trilogy by the end of it, and just go, look how much this dude meant to her at this part in her life and how she then moved on from that. And then, you know, the different lessons that she took forward, etc. Then that could maybe retroactively make the whole thing work. I know they didn't plan it as a trilogy. And obviously you can kind of tell, but like at the same time, there's maybe a way to bring all that stuff together and do the Last of Us trilogy. And I love Ashley Johnson. Like, if you want to give any more roles, any more time to her, like, that's great. So there's a potential there, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think, you know, just looking at this character, and like you said, how her environment and the people she's interacted with have influenced her. I think that's awesome. And I like her being kind of Joel's legacy. You know, obviously she met him when she was already, you know, like growing up, she already had her own personality, but obviously he and his teachings and his personality impacted her a lot. So I like the idea of her taking those teachings and then becoming more than what Joel could be. Like, to me, in The Last of Us Part Two, Ellie just is Joel, like, obviously because she's still feeling that loss, she's reacting in the way that Joel would react, you know, to become consumed by rage, to be, to go inward, to, like, you know, lash out and become violent. And then obviously through the flashbacks and through her interactions with Joel as he was kind of more mature, you kind of get a different side of Ellie. And I want to see that taken into Part Three, where she's understood those teachings, she's been Joel, and now she becomes someone better, someone that he would have liked her to be. Like, I just think that's a cool way to finish that.
That would be cool. And obviously, like, assumedly, because Druckmann was the one who said, we've already outlined the script for what we would do for Part Three, that this would be the thing that he quote unquote comes back for if he is away from the studio doing the HBO stuff. And obviously, you know, we got the factions multiplayer to come. That assumedly will be the thing that comes sooner. And then you've got whatever the fantasy game is. And then, you know, who knows how many more years in the future you eventually get a Last of Us Part Three to round all those things off. But yes, for now, this has been the wind up. We've actually got through it, Josh. We actually did a thing.
We did all right, I reckon.
Without passing out, I don't think it's too bad. But yes, massive thank you to all of us, to all of you for checking in. It's been the wind up. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott Tilford.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.